Welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Monday, October 16th, 2023, as we stand on the verge of an apocalyptic war in the Middle East. And tragedy has been felt at the Health Ranger Ranch over the weekend. I'm sad to report to you that one of my beloved dwarf goats has passed away. And I want to show you her picture here. So the goat that passed away is the one right there in the center, the one closest to the camera. She, I thought she was going to pass away actually in July, but she stayed alive. And of course she has amazing resources here. She was over 11 years old, by the way. So, any animals that get to live on the Health Ranger Ranch are pretty much the luckiest animals in the world, because they don't get killed for their meat. You know, we have a retirement center for chickens, and we get a lot of eggs every day, of course, and we thank them for that. And then they get to live out their lives until they die from old age. And of course, same thing with the goats. We milked these goats many years ago, and then they've just been living essentially as pets. And anyway, this one has passed away, but it's also, there's a sadness, of course, in the entire world. I mean, yeah, I lost a goat, but people in Israel lost their families, and people in Palestine in the Gaza Strip are losing their families, their children, their parents, grandparents. There is a horrific death happening all over this world right now, not just the Middle East. That's just one of the latest. And today we're going to cover the absolutely catastrophic economic implications, world trade implications, supply chains implications, so on, that are resulting from this. And it's going to be absolutely devastating. This is the kind of scenario that I've been warning all of you about for quite some time, that all it's going to take is one event. And suddenly, you know, gold and silver are going to spike, oil's going to spike, people are going to lose their life savings, nations may fall, nuclear weapons may be used, world supply chains will collapse. And we're on the verge of that right now, literally right in this moment. And sadly, everybody's calling for war, at least the nations are. I tweeted this out earlier today, also on brighteon.social. Of course, and my account on Telegram, which is Real Health Ranger. Here it is. If you want to piss off half the people, declare that you support Israel. If you want to piss off the other half of the people, declare that you support Palestine. If you want to piss off everybody, declare that you support peace. And that's the way I feel right now, as someone who is advocating for peace. And I am finding, and this is being confirmed again and again, I'll show you some examples over the weekend, that everybody else out there just wants total annihilation, war, violence, ethnic cleansing, genocide on both sides. And it's astonishing. I mean, yes, Hamas clearly wants to exterminate Israel, wants to rid the world. They want to eliminate all Israelis, all Jews from the planet, and they're willing to sacrifice themselves in that process. They're willing to die in order to achieve mass death upon Israelis. But what's shocking to myself and many others is that Israelis share exactly the same goal and stance. They wish to commit genocide against Palestinians, women, children, civilians, you name it, and they wish to carry out an ethnic cleansing campaign, mass death, total slaughter. And they're not hiding it. You can see it all over Twitter. And in fact, I'm going to play for you a couple of videos here that will absolutely shock you. The first one is from Ezra Yachin, who's 95 years old, an Israeli who has some choice words for genocide against the Palestinians. And this, I'm going to play this for you. I will read the subtitles for you in English. But this is shockingly representative of how virtually all Israelis feel right now, including rabbis, including Americans who are Jews. The vast majority of people, not everybody, but the vast majority, they believe exactly what you're going to hear from old Ezra here, who is, he sounds like he's ripped right out of the Third Reich, frankly, except he's on the side of the Jews wanting to carry out an actual Holocaust against another ethnic group. Now, again, understand, this is heard from both sides. The Hamas group wants to exterminate Israelis, but you would expect better from Israelis, that they wouldn't just openly endorse genocide, yet they do. So check out this video. He says, be triumphant and finish them off and don't leave anyone behind. He says, erase the memory of them. Erase them, their families, mothers and children, he says. These animals can no longer live, he says. Nowadays, we have no excuse. Tomorrow, Hezbollah could send airstrikes on us and the Arabs here could attack us. He says, so we have no excuse. Every Jew with a weapon should go out and kill them. If you have an Arab neighbor, don't wait, he says. Go to his home and shoot him, he says. Unbelievable. Attack them and don't wait for them, he says, to fire airstrikes at us and for the Iron Dome to activate. Attack them before that. We want to invade, not like before. We want to enter and destroy what's in front of us and destroy houses, then destroy the one after it. With all of our forces, complete destruction. Enter and destroy, he says. As you can see, we will witness things we've never dreamed of. I don't know. It's continuing. Let them drop bombs on them and erase them, he says. All the prophecies sent by the prophets are about to occur. Okay, so there you go. An Israeli citizen and veteran openly calling for complete genocide against Palestinian civilians, women, children, bomb them, take their homes, kill their children, murder them all, shoot your neighbor, he says. If your neighbor is an Arab, he says, go shoot your neighbor. Isn't that what Hamas just did that was so horrific? Of course. But the reason I play that is because it is very indicative of what I am hearing over and over and over again from Israeli people. And frankly, it is horrifying to hear this. And it's horrifying to know that their anger can be invoked so vehemently, such rage that completely obliterates any humanity that they might have had before October 7th. It is gone. Now they're calling for extermination of an entire ethnic group. In fact, in that man's case, all Arabs. All Arabs. And it takes some balls to say that when you're Israel surrounded by Arabs, by the way. I mean, you're surrounded by all these Arab nations that are much more powerful than Israel in terms of military might, economic might, number of soldiers. I mean, by far, there's no comparison. It takes some balls to say that they should go out and shoot all the Arabs, even the ones that you live next to. That is really something. Now, a lot of people in Gaza, the Palestinians, are, of course, trying to evacuate. But it's difficult when so many roads have been turned to rubble and the IDF airstrikes continue against residential buildings and residential areas of Gaza. Now, granted, IDF says it's trying to take out the Hamas terrorists. And surely Hamas terrorists are hiding among residential buildings and using their Palestinian brethren, let's say, as human shields. No doubt about that. But that doesn't seem to bother Israel. The IDF is just saying, okay, we'll kill civilians too. We'll just bomb everybody, which is exactly what the IDF is doing. Let me show you this video of a vehicle of refugees. It's 70 plus refugees of Palestinians that are trying to flee to the south as Israel ordered them to do. All right, as you can see in this video, there's kind of like a flatbed truck there with all these refugees on it. And they are, you know, fleeing to the south. They're trying to get away as Israel has ordered them to do so. And you can see all these cars and all the people there pushing, well, wheelchairs, cars with luggage on top, people driving away with their mattresses or whatever, trunks filled. Yeah, people are trying to get away from what's about to happen. motorcycles, scooters, you name it. This is a road that works. Now, that particular convoy reportedly was hit by the IDF in an airstrike, which slaughtered those people that you just saw. And I want you to see, you're not going to actually see the bodies or blood here because this is filmed from a distance, but reportedly this is the same flatbed truck, perhaps, I don't know, a couple hundred feet away, that is being hit by the Israeli Air Force to slaughter those civilians that were trying to obey and trying to flee. And we're seeing more and more reports of Palestinian civilians being killed as they try to flee. Here's the video. As you can see here, driving along, the truck is ahead, the flatbed truck, and then kaboom, it's gone. That's an IDF airstrike, reportedly. I have no way to confirm the authenticity of this, but that is what is being reported, and it is consistent with the very carefully tracked numbers of casualties that have been reported by websites such as, for example, Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera, of course, not being a pro-Israel website, though, has been keeping track of the numbers. And right now, let me go through just a few of these. The number of Palestinians killed in Gaza, which may include, of course, plenty of Hamas terrorists, no question, but that number is currently over 2,300, and injured is 9,700. In the West Bank, 53 killed and 1,100 injured. And in Israel, the Israeli count is now 1,300 Israelis killed, most of those by the Hamas terrorists, and about 3,400 have been injured. Now, in Gaza itself, 423,000 civilians have been displaced. All three desalination plants that produced water, 21 million liters of drinking water every day, have been halted. 270,000 Palestinians have taken shelter in schools. That 53 out of 65 sewage pumping stations are not functional because, of course, Israel cut off the electricity. And so infrastructure has been targeted and destroyed by the Israeli military. 64,000 residential units have been damaged. That can include just one apartment building in a larger building. 90 educational facilities have been damaged. This is all in Gaza. 18 places of worship damaged, including 11 mosques that have been completely obliterated. 19 healthcare centers are not fully operational. 20 ambulances destroyed, and 11 water sanitation facilities have been destroyed. This is because Israel has dropped 6,000 bombs on Gaza in 6 days. 6,000 bombs. And to put it in perspective, as Al Jazeera reports, that's the same number of bombs the U.S. dropped on Afghanistan in an entire year. And Afghanistan is 1,800 times bigger than Gaza. So the density of the bombing, the intensity of the bombing of Gaza is unprecedented in the history of warfare. And Al Jazeera goes on to report that the Palestinian enclave, the Gaza Strip, is home to 2.3 million people, has been under a total blockade since 2007 by Israel. Israel has blockaded the sea, you know, the Eastern Mediterranean, the coastline. They have blocked air and they've blocked the land with a giant wall. Wasn't it the Democrats in America that told us walls don't work? There's a big wall between Israel and Gaza. A heavily fortified perimeter is how it's described. And there's only a couple of crossings that are even functional at this point. There used to be an airport in Gaza. It was destroyed by Israel in 2001. So Israel controls the food supply that goes into Gaza. It controls electricity, controls water, all of it. And there's been a blockade there since 2007. I'm not taking sides, and I'm not on the side of Israel or Palestine. I'm certainly opposed to Hamas and its terrorism activities, but I'm also opposed to genocide, no matter who does it. I've already mentioned all these principles in previous podcasts. I'm opposed to ethnic cleansing. I'm opposed to the mass slaughter of women and children. And so is God, by the way. I do want to point this out, that Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19 says, there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, i.e., you know, people lying on purpose, which is half the world today, and hands that shed innocent blood is one of the seven, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. Sounds like they're describing the U.S. State Department right there. I'm pretty sure that's Victoria Nuland, that's Anthony Blinken, that's Jake Sullivan, that's Joe Biden, that's Barack Obama. I mean, Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19, that's describing the U.S. empire. But one of those is that the Lord hates is, quote, hands that shed innocent blood. And that is critical to understand. I mean, throughout the Bible, God slaughters a whole lot of people, but they're all complicit in some kind of evil, some kind of sin. I mean, God slaughters, you know, Egyptians, for example, when Moses, the parting of the sea, he's, you know, God slaughters the Egyptians. God does a lot of killing, but he doesn't kill innocents. And he, in fact, he despises that. And so anybody who right now is saying that they want to kill innocents is, in fact, committing a sin against God. And I saw a horrifying tweet on this where somebody on Twitter named E. Michael Jones says, quote, Israel is engaged in the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And then another person replies to him, someone named Seth Crosby, replies to him and says, quote, it is a much needed cleansing, yes, but not an ethnic one. Israel is not targeting humans, he says. And again, that is exactly the kind of hate, the kind of violence that I am seeing over and over and over again, openly and publicly advocated by Israelis or people with ties to Israel. They are saying that genocide is approved because they say all Palestinians are not human beings, that they are. But there are plenty of civilians in Israel and plenty of civilians in Palestine that want nothing to do with this. They do not want to shoot their neighbors, as this 95-year-old Israeli man is calling for. They do not desire mass murder. They're not interested in a slaughter. They're only interested in frankly, living together and coexisting. Plenty of people like that in Israel and in Palestine and in America and everywhere else around the world as well. But those voices are being drowned out by the voices of violence and hatred. While Breitbart.com says that they're going to stand with the country that is bombing civilians, which is, that is really something. So we're seeing the Star of David symbol sweep across publishing websites and avatars on social media, just like we saw, of course, the Ukraine flag in 2022 was posted by everybody. We stand with Ukraine. Just like before that, the LGBT flag. Oh, we stand with LGBT. Just like before that, it was the Black Lives Matter flag. They're all just going from flag to flag to flag. And I tweeted the following. I said, it's hard to keep track of which flags we're all supposed to wave to be accepted by polite society. In 2001, after 9/11, we all had to wave the American flag, which I didn't mind waving the American flag because I'm an American. But in 2020, waving the Black Lives Matter flag was obligatory. In 2021, you had to wave the LGBT flag to be accepted in society. In 2022, you had to wave the Ukrainian flag. Now in 2023, you have to wave the flag of Israel. But now, today, if you wave the American flag, you'll be targeted by the FBI as a possible extremist. The only flag I really want to wave is, quote, hey, tyrants, leave me the F alone flag, which I'm pretty sure looks like this. And then I show a picture of the Gadsden flag that says, don't tread on me. That's, you know, with the rattlesnake. That's the flag that actually represents what I want right now is, hey, governments, leave us all alone, because we, the people, we can actually get along with each other. You know, America is a multicultural melting pot. And I don't know if the Israelis could ever get along with Palestinians, but I know that Americans can. I know that we can have Palestinians and we can have Jews and we can have Arabs and Christians and you know, Sikhs and people of different colors and different origins, and all living in fairly close proximity in America. I mean, look at New York City. And for the most part, we the people get along with each other. It's the governments that come along and then engage in violence and violent rhetoric and instigating race wars and running false flag operations, Hamas, being funded by the intelligence community. Hamas is a creation of U.S. and Israeli intelligence. You know, Israel funded Hamas for years because they didn't want to give power to the other Palestinian political groups. They wanted Hamas to be the group in power that could be controlled by the West. So have no illusions about what you're seeing. This is all engineered by the West in order to create strife, conflict, war, to lead us to a much larger war with horrifying global ramifications. And yet, at the same time, there's no plan by the West. They are stumbling into this blind. Look at this from Bloomberg. Here's the headline. As Israel readies Gaza invasion, U.S. sees no plan for what's next. The Biden administration backs Israel, but is worried about the risks. Fears that Israel's conflict with Hamas may widen to region. Oh, yeah, you think? The Biden administration is worried that the Israeli government isn't ready for the fallout from the massive invasion that could come at any hour. The White House fears that Israel doesn't have a plan for what comes next for Gaza after an invasion, and is pressing them to think beyond the immediate goal of eradicating Hamas. Yeah, of course, Israel doesn't have a plan because Israel is reacting, not acting out of a strategy or a rational plan. Israel is reacting. Reacting to whom? Oh, reacting to Hamas, which means Hamas is actually the group that's determining the cycle of reaction here. I mean, think about that. In military circles, there's something called the OODA loop. OODA stands for Observe, Orient, Decide, and Act. And an OODA loop describes the process by which you take in information, you seek to understand it, you grok it, so to speak, and then you decide how to respond to it, and then you act. Well, the enemy, when they surprise you and force you to react to their OODA loop, what they do is they preempt your OODA loop. And this is what Hamas has done to Israel. So Hamas actually set their own actions, did a surprise attack, and forced Israel to respond to Hamas. And Hamas knew that Israel would respond with broad overreach. They got 6,000 bombs in 6 days, and now an invasion of Gaza. And that Israel would do so without a plan and without rationality, that Israel would be so incensed and overwhelmed with rage and anger that we have all seen since then, that Israel would leap to slaughter Hamas, and thereby Israel would fall into the trap of the Hamas OODA loop. And what does that look like? Well, it looks like so-called super bombs that are being planted in Gaza to prepare for Israel's attack on Gaza. These super bombs will absolutely slaughter IDF soldiers and destroy Israel's tanks and other armored vehicles as they try to make their way through Gaza. Now, Hamas had 2 years to plan this attack on Israel. In that 2 years, they also had time to plant these super bombs all over Gaza, and they could probably predict where Israel was going to come in. So Hamas is actually running the OODA loop, and Israel is reacting to Hamas's OODA loop, which puts Israel right where Hamas wants them. Think about this, because Israel's not thinking about this. In fact, I want to play for you a short video of a man, an American, who's obviously pro-Israel, describing the super bombs that are coming and warning the Israeli military that they're about to get slaughtered at least some number of them, slaughtered in Gaza. Check out this video.
Folks, what I'm about to give you is confidential information that is being released thanks to sources inside the Chinese Communist Party. These sources are telling Miles Guo, the founder of the new federal state of China, that Israel will face a massive setup job when it goes into Gaza. Now, this information confirms my warnings issued last night on the Real America's Voice program, that I believe Hamas is looking to lure Israel into Gaza, and there will be all kinds of booby traps and improvised explosive devices. Now, this new information says these IEDs buried beneath the ground will be via remote control, and they are being dubbed as, quote, super bombs. That from these sources inside the Chinese Communist Party. Now, how does the CCP know about this? That's my biggest concern. The CCP knows about this because I fear they're working with Iran with the planning of all of this. These sources also say that after this happens, there will be attacks on Israel from nearly all sides of that country. This is a warning to the people of Israel, not to deter you, but to take precautions to prevent the attacks from happening and go in and then wipe Hamas out like never before.
So there you go. Stinchfield there, with thanks to the Liberty Daily for finding that video. Stinchfield warning Israel to watch out for the superbomb traps in Gaza, but to go in and wipe out Hamas. Now, again, as I said earlier, Hamas knows exactly how Israel is going to react. They're going to react irrationally, and they're going to fall right into the trap. And also, as part of this trap, by the way, you notice how two aircraft carriers of the United States have now been lured into this region. So if you wanted to, let's say, create a situation where you had two American aircraft carriers in the East Mediterranean Sea in order to, be subjected to, let's say, an underwater nuclear weapon or something, then this is exactly the kind of event that has done this. And America's reaction is also very predictable. So the United States is reacting to the Hamas OODA loop at the same time. So this could be a trap both for the United States of America and for Israel. And we know that Iran has nuclear weapons, thanks to Barack Obama. Even though publicly it's not yet admitted that they do, we know that they do. A lot of other nations have nuclear weapons as well that could lend them, you know, for example, Russia, Pakistan. I mean, there are nukes to be found. There are suitcase nukes still floating around from the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, by the way. Well, all it takes is one nuclear weapon planted in the East Mediterranean Sea to take out two carrier strike groups. The USS Ford, and I forgot the name of the other one that's there. There's two aircraft carriers there right now, plus all the cruisers and destroyers and all the support ships that go with them. And America is right where Hamas wanted them to be. And maybe it's not just Hamas behind this, you see, a much greater war. And as we just heard from Bloomberg, Israel has no plan. And America has no plan. Israel and America are merely reacting. Now, from AlJazeera.com, Israel-Hamas war updates. Iran tells Israel to stop before it's too late. Iran warns Israel to immediately halt its, quote, war crimes against Gaza, or it could face a huge earthquake of resistance. Whatever that means. Huge earthquake? Could that be a nuke? More than 320 Palestinians have been killed in 24 hours. Let's see. Israel continues bombing Gaza a day after telling 1.1 million residents to head south. And let me read you this. Israeli president, who is different from the prime minister, but the president, Isaac Herzog, suggests that civilians in Gaza are legitimate targets. And this comes from the Huffington Post. And Herzog says it is an entire nation out there that is responsible. He's talking about all the Palestinians. He says, it is not true, this rhetoric about civilians not being aware, not involved. It's absolutely not true. They could have risen up, he says. They could have fought against that evil regime which took over Gaza in a coup d'etat. This is fascinating because he's saying that if the people don't successfully rise up against their own governments and overthrow their evil governments, then the people can be killed. Well, I wonder if he's saying the same thing. Does he mean that Israeli citizens should rise up and overthrow the Israeli government? Or if not, do they deserve to be killed by his logic? Or is he saying that the American people should rise up against their government? And if not, they all deserve to be killed? What if there are people in Gaza who tried to rise up against Hamas and they failed? What if the elections were rigged? You know the elections are rigged in Israel and the United States. Elections are rigged all the time. So this excuse by Herzog is saying that, oh, we can bomb all the civilians in Palestine because they did not overthrow Hamas. That's what he's saying. Think about that logic. And he's implying that that makes civilians legitimate targets. It's exactly what he's implying, that they are culpable for not overthrowing Hamas from within. This is the logic that the president of Israel is now openly stating. Consider that, how insane that is. I mean, I guess by this logic, Israel could just bomb unlimited civilian targets in Syria. You say, well, the Syrian people should have risen up and overthrown their government to a government of our liking. And since the Syrian people didn't rise up and overthrow the regime, we're going to bomb the Syrian residents, civilians, women and children. Same thing with Iran, right? Well, the Iranian people should have risen up and overthrown the Iranian government and installed a government that we like. And if they didn't, then we're going to bomb the Iranian civilians. I mean, this is the logic of the president of Israel. And it is the logic of a madman, of an insane, raving lunatic who now really exemplifies the emotional reaction that is leading Israel right into this trap that was set by Hamas. Now, Netanyahu is all in with the genocide, and he has said so numerous times. He says, quote, we will never forget the atrocities committed by our enemies against the Jewish people. Our enemies are just beginning to pay the price. I won't go into detail about what happens next, but I'm telling you, this is just the beginning. And he talks about, quote, unprecedented force, and that is not just a one-time thing. He's talking about wiping out all Palestinians. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia, its foreign ministry, issued a statement that says, quote, we affirm our categorical rejection of calls for the forced displacement of the Palestinian people from Gaza. And then, as CNBC reports, Iran-backed Hezbollah joining Israel-Hamas conflict would be a game changer, says a Middle East expert, that Hezbollah holds a great deal of power in Lebanon in the form of its Shiite political party, which holds 62 seats in the country's parliament, alongside the Iran-backed proxy militant unit. Lebanon is facing its worst economic crisis in history with triple-digit inflation. I covered that a couple weeks ago, and a currency that has lost more than 90% of its value since the onset of an economic crisis in 2019. Remember what I was talking about a couple weeks ago? I talked to a Lebanese man who was telling me about how their currency has totally collapsed. Yeah. An exchange of fire between Lebanese militant group Hezbollah and the armed forces in northern Israel signaled that the conflict in Gaza could spread regionally. Joseph Dar, the author of Hezbollah, the Political Enemy in Lebanon's Party of God, told CNBC that Hezbollah has become not only a key Lebanese political and military actor, it has become a key regional actor. So what happens next depends on whether Hezbollah intervenes or not. On Friday, Hezbollah's deputy chief, Naim Qassem, said his party was fully ready to contribute to the fighting. According to Reuters, the behind-the-scenes calls with us by great powers, Arab countries, envoys of the United Nations, directly and indirectly telling us not to interfere, will have no effect, he says. And then the Gateway Pundit reports that Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian publicly warned Israel of an attack by Lebanon-based Hezbollah that would cause a huge earthquake in response to Israel's attacks on Hamas-controlled Gaza after Hamas slaughtered 1,300 Israelis and so on. And that's also being reported by Axios. Now, Russia is offering to mediate all of this, to back off from the violence, the bombings, to try to mediate a two-state solution. And Putin put out a statement. He said that settlement mechanisms have been established, but the United States has neglected these mechanisms over the past few years and decided to regulate everything on its own, did not use these mechanisms, and in recent years has relied on meeting the material needs of the population living in the Palestinian territories, meaning the U.S. is handing out money instead of trying to solve this problem long-term for coexistence. So, and then also I forgot Michael Snyder from the Economic Collapse blog. He's got a great title here. We are literally on the brink of an apocalyptic war between Israel and Iran. And sometimes I pronounce it Iran, sometimes Iran, kind of depending on the context, but most Americans say Iran. And in that story, Iranian Foreign Minister, who I just mentioned, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, stated that his nation has its red lines and that, quote, Iran will have to respond if Israel conducts a major offensive in Gaza. See, that's going to be the trigger point. If Israel moves with force against Gaza. In addition, that spokesperson from Iran, well, the foreign minister, is also threatening America with, quote, heavy losses if the U.S. military decides to intervene. He says, quote, if the scope of the war expands, heavy losses will befall America as well. And remember that America has sent the two aircraft carriers and, well, the carrier battle groups right there into the East Mediterranean Sea, right where Hamas and Iran want them. Michael Snyder writes, quote, we are so close to a major regional war. The U.S. and other Western powers are trying to keep Iran and Hezbollah out of the conflict, but it just isn't working. Once the Israelis make their move in Gaza, expect Hezbollah to pull the trigger. And once that happens, the Biden administration will have a decision to make. If Hezbollah starts firing thousands of missiles into Israel, I think that the Biden administration will order strikes against Hezbollah. So that's all written by Michael Snyder. Once the U.S. uses its missiles, you know, cruise missiles and so on from the carrier groups to strike Hezbollah, that's when Iran gets involved. Michael Snyder wraps it up saying, quote, as this conflict evolves, we are going to see images on our television screens that are going to absolutely shock all of us. So many people are going to die, and our world will be permanently changed by the horrors that we will soon witness. Exactly. And so that brings us to the analysis by Tuomas Malinen, who's an economist who I interviewed maybe a year ago, who has done some really outstanding work, by the way, and you can find him on Substack, M.T. Malinen, M-A-L-I-N-E-N, or you could think of it as Ma-Linen. That's the way to spell it. Substack.com, a piece called The Sword of Damocles, an economic worst-case scenario for the Israeli-Palestine war. So he lays out 10 points that I'm going to go through here, because this is what we all need to be thinking about where this is going. And the reason I mentioned everything up to this point is for you to understand, if you don't already, that Israel is not backing down. You can see the rage. You can see the genocidal intent. You can see it's just going to be war, 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 war. Israel's not backing down. Even if Russia offers to mediate, even if Egypt offers to mediate, it doesn't matter. The only way Israel backs down is if the U.S. orders Israel to back down, and the U.S. will not do that because the U.S. wants world war to ensnare Iran and eventually Russia, as we've covered. So this is going to go to war, and that war is going to expand. just like we talked about there, Hezbollah is going to get involved. The U.S. aircraft carriers, who have a combined, I don't know, 160 aircraft or something like that, they're going to attack Hezbollah. They're going to attack targets probably in Syria, not just southern Lebanon, but also Syria. And Iran is going to respond. I mean, and Iran has missiles that can reach Israel. Iran can bomb Tel Aviv, by the way, and Tel Aviv doesn't have adequate air defenses to stop that. So you can see how this begins. I mean, it's like a ping pong thing, but with grenades. It's like playing badminton with hand grenades, you know? I mean, first Israel attacks Gaza, and Lebanon attacks Israel. The U.S. attacks Hezbollah. When I say Lebanon, I mean Hezbollah. So the U.S. attacks Hezbollah. Iran attacks Israel. And then we're in a regional war that is biblical, could become apocalyptic very quickly, could go nuclear very quickly. And you know what's notable in all of this? Which just kind of indicates that we're looking at the decline of the U.S. empire, but the voices of reason right now in this particular war are Russia and China. Yeah, the U.S. has no voice of reason. The U.S. has just abandoned all principles, and so has Israel. Just abandoned all the principles. So have the European Union countries, by the way. But the voices of reason that are saying, hey, let's not all kill each other are Russia and China right now. That's notable because it shows that sort of the adults in the room are not America, not the West, and not Israel. All right, so anyway, Tuomas Malinen has the following to say, these 10 points of an economic worst-case scenario. Actually, I don't think this is the worst-case scenario, but it's pretty bad. Okay, number one, he says the conflict escalates into a regional war with the U.S. becoming directly involved. Okay, that's what I just described. That's going to happen. Number two, OPEC responds with an oil embargo. Oh, a lot of people hadn't thought about that one, but of course, the Arab nations export the vast majority of the oil that is, you know, shipped around the world. An oil embargo would have enormous implications for the cost of energy for Western nations. And also, by the way, liquefied natural gas, or LNG. Because Europe, since the Nord Stream pipelines were destroyed by the U.S. Navy, cutting off Gazprom and cutting off natural gas from Germany, Europe has had to rely on LNG or natural gas exported from Arab nations. And if there's an energy embargo, then that LNG will not be available to Western Europe. So Europe will suffer an even worse economic implosion, worse than what they already have. So think about no natural gas for Europe. And think about the Strait of Hormuz, by the way, through which I think something like a third of all the natural gas in the world that is exported flows through the Strait of Hormuz. And if you look at your geography, you'll notice that the Strait of Hormuz is controlled by Iran. And Iran can shut it down anytime they want. Oh, actually, that's point number three here. Point three, Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz. Yes, it's exactly what's going to happen. So an oil embargo and an energy embargo from OPEC countries, and then Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz. Devastating consequences for the world in terms of halted energy exports out of the Arab nations. Number four, the price of oil reaches $300 a barrel. Can you imagine what that's going to do to the price of food in America? Do you have any idea? Now, currently oil, let's just say very roughly, is around $100 a barrel. It's going to triple. And this may be a kind estimate. It could more than triple. It could quadruple. Who knows? Oil is going to absolutely skyrocket. Now, what will that do to Russia's income? If the Arab nations issue an oil embargo, Russia will be able to sell its oil for triple what it's getting now, if not more. Now, remember how Western Europe tried to cap Russia's oil at $60 a barrel to try to harm Russia's economy by claiming that no ships could haul oil, they wouldn't have insurance unless the oil was capped at $60 a barrel. Well, that's already been bypassed by Russia. Nobody gives a crap about Western Europe's, you know, rules and restrictions. It's, everybody just bypasses it. But imagine if Russia is able to sell oil for $300 a barrel. What that would do for the capital influx of Russia's war machine that is in conflict with Ukraine. So if anybody wants an oil embargo to happen, it's Russia and other energy exporters around the world, but most of them are in the Middle East, and they wouldn't be exporting if there's an embargo. But the oil price going to $300 a barrel would devastate Western economies, devastate them. Inflation, just, it would skyrocket again. Food prices would very quickly double from even where they are now, which is in many cases doubled from where it was 2 years ago. So you're going to see food prices go so sky high that there will be famine across Western Europe and the United States at a level that we've never witnessed before. That's what's about to happen. So if anybody listening to this, if you think, oh, this is just over there in Palestine and Israel, and most people can't even point it out on a map anyway, I'm like, ah, it doesn't affect us. Oh, yes, it does. If you eat, if you buy food, if you buy fuel, it does affect you. It's going to extract a very heavy price, which gets us to point number five here from Tuomas Malinen. Point five, Europe succumbs into a full-blown energy crisis due to the LNG shortage, the natural gas shortage. He nails it. Europe would suffer an economic collapse of its industry, which has already been extremely harmed by the combination of COVID followed by the Gazprom destruction. You know, industry has been shut down across Germany and France and the UK in many cases, and many other nations as well. It's amazing that anything still operates in Western Europe, but it's going to get far worse once there's an energy embargo out of the Middle East. A lot of people aren't thinking about this. Yes, this affects you in France. This affects you in Ireland. This affects you in Poland, in Austria, in all these countries, even the Nordic countries, which I know they have their own energy sources, but energy is a commodity. When there's less energy from the Middle East, there's more demand for energy everywhere that people can get it. So prices will go through the roof. And with the grand solar minimum kicking in, by the way, the winters are going to get colder all across Northern Europe, and you're going to need more fuel to not freeze. Number six, he says, massive spike in energy prices reinvigorates inflation. Yes, that's what I was just describing, with central banks responding accordingly. Okay, now, you need to understand this. Tuomas didn't quite explain this in detail in his article. When inflation skyrockets, then the central banks have to hike interest rates. So they will get aggressive with hiking interest rates, probably by 50 basis points instead of just a quarter percentage point. It'll be like half a percentage point or a three-quarter point raise. And this is going to devastate the banks because, as you know, banks still hold a lot of long-term treasury debt with yields in the 1% range or sub 1% range. And those long-term treasuries have already lost something like 40 to 45% of their value as of right now, even with the Fed rate not sky high. If you start hiking the Fed rates, the interbank lending rates is what they are, then the value of those long-term treasuries is going to plummet even more. You could lose, 80% of the value of those, which is going to devastate the financial sector, which is point number seven here. Financial markets and the global banking sector collapse. Yes, you can see that banks are not solvent because they are holding all of this low yield debt, which is really a result of all the money creation and money printing of Western nations, most notably the United States. And this does have a lot to do with COVID, by the way, because that's when the money printing went insane, but it's still going insane under the Biden administration and also in the European Union. Massive money printing galore which is accelerating inflation, which is causing the central banks to hike rates, which is causing banks to fail. It's a doom loop, as it's called. And so point number eight here is that the debt crisis engulfs the U.S., forcing the Federal Reserve to enact yet another financial market bailout. Now, the bailout means money printing. So this next bailout, if they can even attempt it, will have to be so big, it'll be multiple trillions of dollars of a bailout. Now, recall that the U.S. is already $33 trillion in debt right now. And that doesn't even count entitlements and, you know, future payouts. Actually, the U.S. is a couple hundred trillion dollars in debt right now, really. But the official debt number is $33 trillion. Well, if you have to print, let's say, another $5 or $10 trillion to bail out the collapsing banking sector, which is going to need massive bailouts because of all the derivatives and, you know, all the treasuries that they're holding that are failing and so on. And there's a lot of leveraged debt instruments throughout the system that are going to fail. Just listen to James Rickards on that point. Or, you know, Andy Shechtman and some of the people I've interviewed as well. Martin Armstrong last week. Check out that interview. But this bailout, this will be the last bailout before the collapse, if they even pull it off. But this bailout will require many trillions of dollars, and the U.S. debt might hike overnight from $33 trillion to, let's say, $40 trillion, or even $45 trillion. Now, when the U.S. has to print that much money in order to bail out the failing financial sector, remember, this all begins with Israel attacking Gaza. Don't forget that. That's the trigger of all of this that we're going through. So when all this money is printed, the nations of the world that are already fed up with the U.S. Military bullying, the U.S. weaponization of its dollar currency, the U.S. weaponizing the SWIFT system and cutting Russia off from SWIFT, the U.S. bombing and destroying the Nord Stream pipelines, affecting Gazprom exports, and so on. The nations of the world are ready to reject the petrodollar. Most nations are. And they will. This will be the opportunity to just sell all U.S. treasuries, which China is beginning to do anyway, and other countries will do the same. They'll just sell all U.S. treasuries, which will make it very expensive for the U.S. Treasury to sell new debt, meaning they'll have to pay a much higher interest rate or higher yields on treasuries as debt instruments in order to entice buyers from around the world. But there will be fewer and fewer buyers, because who wants to hold U.S. dollars when the U.S. government is printing $10 trillion overnight? Nobody wants to hold it at that point. The dollar will collapse, and the petrodollar trade will collapse. That's point number nine here. So the world will stop using the petrodollar virtually overnight, and they'll switch to, you know, anything else, the yuan, the rupees, the rubles, anything, the real, just anything other than the dollar, gold, Bitcoin, maybe, who knows, anything. But they won't be using the dollar. So the petrodollar trade collapses, which means that then at that time, all these other nations around the world, they start dumping their dollars. They don't need them anymore. They don't need dollars to buy oil. And the Saudis will probably be on board with all this because, of course, they don't like America anymore since Joe Biden came in and insulted the Saudis and shut down, you know, oil infrastructure. And the whole Biden administration is anti-energy to begin with. So the Saudis won't be with us. The Saudis won't be with Israel. You know, the Saudi-Israeli peace deal is history, done. It's not going to happen. Saudis are going to be more with, I mean, believe it or not, although this sounds unbelievable, the Saudis will tend to side with Iran. Which, if you know anything about the Saudi-Iranian politics, you would think that's impossible. Those two countries hate each other. Well, but you know how the saying goes, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so you could see the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates and Iran, all three of them on the same page on issues of being anti-West or anti-America, anti-petrodollar. You could see that happen. And so then That gets us to the final stage, point 10, hyperinflation emerges. Now, he means hyperinflation, of course, for those things that are denominated in dollars. This is hyperinflation for the West only. Hyperinflation will not be experienced in Russia, nor in Saudi Arabia, nor China or Iran or even Brazil or Turkey or India, wherever. It'll be hyperinflation for the West because the West currency will be in a state of accelerating collapse, reflected by rapidly skyrocketing prices of consumer goods, exacerbated by higher prices of energy and the oil embargo. The result will be the collapse of the U.S. economy as we know it, the collapse of the currency, the collapse of the banking system in the United States, then followed by all of the social chaos, the uprisings, the cities going up in flames, the criminal element out on the streets. I mean, all of the lawlessness that America is now known for in its cities will be on display. It'll be like a purge parade. And in that process, cities are going to be destroyed. The functioning of cities will be completely destroyed. And the government will fall, the federal government, because of the collapse of the currency. It will go full militant in trying to assert power and dominance over the states across America that are then trying to secede from the Union. And ultimately, you're going to see the breakup of the United States of America into regional nation states with their own new currencies. And when that happens, guess what you want to be holding? Gold and silver, or anything of value, maybe Bitcoin, maybe privacy crypto, but for sure gold and silver, and for sure land, for sure infrastructure, because the destruction of the United States of America as we know it is a plausible outcome of these 10 steps that Tuomas Mälinen has laid out here, which are very insightful, by the way. This is exactly how it could go. Now, this could all be stopped by Israel not invading Gaza, not launching that military attack. But you know they're going to. They know they're going to. They're publicly bragging about it. So if you've wondered how the banking system collapses or what's going to be the trigger of this, well, here's a plausible scenario for you right here. And understand that the globalists want to collapse the United States of America. They want to destroy the dollar. This is simply a mechanism that allows them to do so. Why do you think they started this war? Why do you think Hamas carried out this attack? Hamas directed by Western intelligence. Israel ordered the stand down of its own military to allow the attack to take place, because Israel and the United States are both following the orders of globalists, and globalists are setting things into motion that will end in the total destruction of the United States of America, which is the only country that has a Second Amendment and a First Amendment, for that matter. And the globalists know that they need the United States out of its way in order to achieve global domination and extermination. Now, this is critical to understand, because as much as you see Hamas wanting to exterminate Israelis, and many Israelis wanting to exterminate all Palestinians, the truth is globalists want to exterminate everybody, well, except themselves. So no matter who dies, no matter how many die, no matter which tribe attacks which other tribe, the globalists are happy about it as long as America is destroyed in the process. And that's exactly what this is intended to do. These are not accidents. These are engineered plans. This is why right now, probably as you hear this, gold and silver are probably hiking a lot. And personally, I locked in a little bit more silver over the weekend because I had a strong sense of where this is going. If you want to look at gold and silver, our sponsor today in that space is the Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company. They're a long-term sponsor on precious metals. You can find them and look at their real-time pricing, by the way, at metalswithmike.com. metalswithmike.com. They're probably going to be difficult to reach this week, especially if Israel attacks Hamas, but you can fill out the form there and they will be working double time to try to get back with you as quickly as possible. And they may be able to get back very quickly if you beat the rush. Who knows? I know that last week call volume was picking up quite a lot. And I did speak with Chris Olson over the weekend from Treasure Island. And he's very concerned about the precious metals industry getting hammered again, like what happened in March this year when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed. So if Israel moves on Gaza, I expect, although I'm not a speculator and I'm not your financial advisor, you know, all the normal disclaimers, do your own research, get your own financial advice, but I would expect gold and silver and oil, all three, to absolutely move strongly in response to the perception of global instability stemming from Israel's full-blown attack on Gaza. And the fact that Iran says it's going to get involved. Anytime Iran gets involved in wars, oil is going to go up. And usually when oil goes up, gold goes up. And usually when gold goes up, silver goes up. I mean, these tend to move as a basket. Not always. But when Russia attacked Ukraine last year, you know, February 22nd of 2022, I believe. Well, what happened to gold? It went to $2,050. Now, since then, it fell back quite a lot, even into the 1800s per ounce in terms of the spot price. But I would not be surprised to see gold exceed where it was last year. I think it could go well beyond 2050. But understand, I don't promote speculation with metals. I promote asset protection. The dollar is going to lose value like crazy. If Israel goes into Gaza, which may have already happened by the time you hear this, you can count on the dollar accelerating its devaluation. Count on it. It's not going to be in one day or even 1 week or 1 month, but over a relatively short period of time, the dollar is going to plunge toward worthlessness. You can see it. You can see the money printing. You can see the world rejecting the dollar. You can see the fallout from this. I mean, Israel can't see it. And certainly the Biden regime can't see it, but you and I can see it and the globalists can see it because they planned it this way. The dollar is going to become worthless. And anybody holding deposits in dollars is going to be left with virtually no value. What's going to hold value? Gold and silver and land, as I've said before. And also, by the way, I took a look at Monero prices today. Monero has held up pretty darn well over time. Monero, which is the privacy crypto coin, is doing, I think, quite well, holding its own, despite a lot of ups and downs in the crypto space. And Monero is, of course, very, very portable. You know, it's easier to send around than, you know, shipping cases of silver to people or carrying it in your pockets, you know. And by the way, you know, Palestinians that live in Gaza are mostly impoverished. I mean, unemployment among the youth there is 70%. It is the embargoes that have been in place against Gaza have been absolutely devastating. But for those who actually had money in that area, you know what they would want to have right now as they are fleeing? They would want to have either gold that they could hide on their person or crypto, privacy crypto, that they could take with them, or even Bitcoin. If they had a wallet, they'd memorize the password, they could flee, and they could take the money with them, and then when they get to wherever they end up, I don't know if that's going to be Egypt or America or somewhere else, maybe London. There's going to be an influx of Palestinians coming, by the way. But wherever they get, then they could get a computer, they could set up a Monero wallet, type in their seed phrase, and guess what? Boom, all their money shows up again. They're back in business. They fled with their money. That's the advantage of Monero. Or if they could carry the gold with them and not get robbed along the way and not get searched and looted by, you know, customs officials or whatever, then they could have gold. But gold and Monero are the things that would save people. But the bottom line is most people in Gaza are impoverished and they don't have either one. They don't have gold and they don't have Monero for the most part. Some do, but very few. But keep this in mind because I'm telling you, a lot of people listening to this, in America, you're going to have refugees. You're going to have refugees fleeing the cities in America. And these refugees are, for the most part, going to lose absolutely everything, especially as the banking system collapses. And we can now see the mechanism for how this happens. But for those who have crypto, see, I think that as the dollar collapses, more people will go into crypto and gold and silver. In my mind, there's no question. I mean, you might disagree with me or a different analysis, which is fine. I mean, do your own research, draw your own conclusions. But right now, I mean, remember how months ago I was saying I want to get everything out of the fiat currency banking system? Suddenly seems like a really smart move, doesn't it? Given what's about to happen. Yeah. So anyway, metalswithmike.com. That's if you want to check out prices on gold and silver and get some, and you want to beat the rush, if that's even possible at this point, well, that's who you contact. And thank you for supporting our sponsor in that space, as they operate on crazy thin margins anyway. So people think being in the gold business means you're all going to get rich. No, you can get poor holding gold when nobody wants to buy it. And then all of a sudden everybody wants to buy it on the same day. Like that's what the gold business is like. I mean, ask Andy Shechtman, who I've interviewed multiple times. You ask Andy Shechtman, it's like, you know, for 8 months, you're sitting on silver, too much silver. You know, you're paying rent or interest payments on loans, trying to get rid of it. You got too much. And then all of a sudden, one day, something happens and everybody wants silver at the same time and you don't have enough. Like that's the silver business. It's a tough business to be in. I would not want to be in that business. It's very difficult. Anyway, Tuomas Malinen, his conclusion is, quote, "It may not be a bad idea to buy gold, gasoline, gas, and wood if you have a wood stove." That's his advice right there. By the way, Tuomas Malinen, he does have a disclaimer after his article. He says, "No information contained in this entry should be construed as investment advice. Readers should always consult their own personal financial or investment advisor before making any investment decisions. And readers using this post do so solely at their own risk." And I agree with that. And I repeat that here verbally as well. You know, make your own decisions. But in my opinion, people left holding dollars are going to be left penniless. They will have nothing. And many of them will end up being refugees in America or in Canada or in, you know, in Britain. I mean, there are going to be European refugees in Europe fleeing the collapsed cities and trying to get to some area where they won't die. You know, where the violence won't kill them. Understand that, at least in my view, we're looking at the final chapter of the West on planet Earth. The Western empires rooted in printing money and bullying the rest of the world. The unipolar version of global domination is coming to an end, and this is what it looks like. It looks like world war. Anytime there's been a significant change throughout history, in terms of empires that are in control, you know, the Roman Empire, you know, the Persian Empire, the British Empire, the Japanese Empire, and so on. Anytime there have been such changes, it always involves economic collapse and violence. And that's exactly what's coming. You know, I forgot to mention Egyptian empires, Assyrian empires, you know, it depends on how far you want to go back. So I've just laid out for you here today the plausible pathway of, number one, massive escalation of this conflict following Israel's attack on Gaza. And then secondly, the devastating global economic consequences that will lead to the collapse of the dollar, the collapse of the Western banking system, and the collapse of the United States of America, which will, of course, collapse Western cities. Given this information, you know, you can choose to either disagree with it, agree partially with it, or wholly, or maybe you think, yeah, this makes sense, but it might take a lot longer. Okay, great. Then that means you have more time to prepare. If you agree with even part of this analysis, you understand that this risk exists. You know, none of this is a 100% certainty. These are scenarios that appear to be at a high probability of occurring based on what we know today. But those circumstances can change. Maybe Israel backs down and then we don't go into this version of doom that I've just laid out here today. Well, that's great. And then gold would fall and silver would fall and oil would fall if we back off from the precipice here. Okay. I would love that. Even though I own gold and silver, I would rather not have world war, even if it means lower prices of gold and silver. You know, more stability is good for us all in the long run. But if you believe even part of this, I urge you to prepare accordingly. You're probably already fairly well prepared compared to most people. Because if you've been listening to my podcast for any length of time, you know, you have extra food supplies, you have extra emergency medicine, you probably have some amount of gold and silver, and those are all very wise things to do. If you don't have those things, look into it and do it quickly. Because let me give you an example of what I'm doing. I've got certain ranch vehicles that were coming up on needing some maintenance. For example, I have one piece of equipment that has a maintenance due at 1,000 hours, and I have 819 hours on it, but I sent it into the shop and I told them I want to do the 1,000 hour service now. And they were like, "What? You're crazy. You could run this 200 more hours before you do the 1,000 hour service." Because that service costs a couple grand and you have to swap out the hydraulic oil and hydraulic oil filters and things like that. And I said, "No, I want to do the 1,000 hour service today, now, do it now, replace all the parts now, because in my mind, I know 6 months from now, there may be no supply chain for the parts that I need, or those parts might be 6 months away. I mean, think about what's going to happen to the supply chain. You know, I took one of my diesel vehicles into a dealer last week, and they told me that to get the parts for the diesel version of this vehicle, they're going to have to make a bunch of phone calls because of the UAW strike. And it might be many, many weeks to get those parts. It might be 4 weeks. It might be 6 weeks. It's not clear yet. But even right now, I'm going to have to wait maybe 1 to 2 months to get those parts. And we're not even in World War III yet. Supply chains are breaking down for lots of reasons. But think about, what do you have in your life right now? Maybe an air conditioning system, maybe a vehicle, maybe the roof on your house or something that if there's maintenance coming up, it makes a lot of sense to consider doing that now while the supply chain still functions at all. Because where this is headed in the next few days, or not to mention months or next year, is anybody's guess. We may have no functioning supply chain. We may have no ship traffic through the Suez Canal. We may have no functioning banking system, no dollar at some point. Don't know when that is, but it's coming. And what is it that you're going to need to function? I mean, maybe you need a backup solar generator. Maybe you need a new refrigerator. Maybe you need a off-grid tools that can work without electricity. One of the things that I do, I'll just share with you one of my tips, is I have the solar generator that you can get from BeReady123.com, which is part of the satellite phone store, by the way. And I've got the solar panels for that. And then I have my power tools that are cordless power tools. And after extensive testing and purchasing many brands, by the way, I have settled on Milwaukee as the brand that is super dependable. In fact, let me just state this. Last week at my lab, I had to drill a hole, a 4-inch hole, through the lab cabinet surface material, which is this crazy, insane, durable, like chemically resistant, fire resistant, I mean, probably, you know, Hamas resistant material. This stuff can handle probably RPGs. It's crazy. I don't know what this is made of, but I had to drill a hole over a year ago for our ICP-MS instrument, and now I have to drill a hole, well, I just finished drilling it last week, for the new dioxin testing equipment, which is a gas chromatography system. So that hole, the diamond hole saw that you attach to your heavy duty drill, the diamond hole saw itself is like $140. That's just the bit. And then to drill this hole takes like insane amounts of power and time. And I had to keep pouring water into the, in fact, you know what? I actually have a little video of drilling this thing. Let me play that video for you because you won't believe it. It's just a few seconds, but I got to show you this. So there's the 4-inch diamond tip, and I'm drilling through this crazy material, which is with all the water mixed in, it's turning it into kind of like this gray mud. And that drill right there is a Makita drill. And I brought three drills, and the Makita drill, it just couldn't handle it. And the batteries just stopped, I think because of heat protection. That's an 18-volt Makita. But then I had brought also Milwaukee with their, what's it called, their high output batteries. It's like 8.0 amp hours, I think. It's called a high output. And that sucker would just go and go and go. And that's how I was ultimately able to drill through that, was with the Milwaukee drills. Now, the reason that matters is because even off-grid, you know, you can charge your power tools with a solar generator. So you can turn sunlight into battery power for your tools. And then, of course, those tools can include, you know, blowers and grinders and drills and all kinds of things. I mean, trimmers and chainsaws, everything runs on those batteries. And Milwaukee's got, you know, this huge assortment of tools that all use the same batteries, which is the M18. So it's called M as in Mary, M18. That's a 18-volt stuff. They also have M12, which is smaller, and it's all 12-volt stuff. But I tend to use the M18 stuff, and it just works. And it just, the Milwaukee finished that hole and just went right through it. But I would say the total drilling time on that hole was like 20 minutes. That's how long it took to drill through that thing. Welcome to my world, where it's like, yeah, I get to drill holes in the benchtop equipment at the lab in addition to everything else. Because, you know, I don't have some hole drilling guy on salary that I can just say, hey, come in and drill the hole. No, it's me. In fact, let me show you something else that's part of my world. I was out harvesting pine needles because we're making a shikimic acid nasal spray that we're giving away for free during our upcoming Black Friday event at healthrangerstore.com. And I was out harvesting pine needles to go into the herb grinder and then to go into the ultrasonic extractor and then to be made into the free nasal spray that we're giving away. So check out this video. It's about 2 minutes, but it's kind of cool. Check it out. Oh, wow. This is amazing. I am here one-handed harvesting pine needles because we are making a very special high shikimic acid pine needle nasal spray that we're giving away for free during the Black Friday sales event at healthrangerstore.com. And, well, at least free with a purchase, I should say. But if you buy almost anything, you're going to get some free nasal spray made out of this. And what we do is we actually grind this with an herb grinder. And then after the herb grinder, we run it through an ultrasonic extractor. And I'm going to take a video of that actually and show you. And what that does is it extracts the shikimic acid with incredible efficiency. And I want to thank the tree. This is, you can see the pine cones here. This is a kind of a lost pines, what's called a loblolly pine tree. So thank you, tree, for these amazing gifts of God's medicine. Thank you for providing this for people to protect their health against all kinds of threats that are happening in our world today. Thank you for making this medicine free. Thank you for being our living pharmacy in our world today. Thank you, God and Mother Nature, for all these amazing gifts. And we are honored to be able to gleefully, joyfully harvest these amazing gifts. Powerful medicine right here. A lot of people don't know that Tamiflu, the drug that is approved by the FDA to treat pandemics, Tamiflu, is made out of shikimic acid. Shikimic acid for Tamiflu comes from pine needles. This is it. This is what Tamiflu is made out of. Except it's very, very expensive in that format. Whereas right here, it's free. Free from Mother Nature and God. And so this is what we do here at the Health Ranger store. And we're always careful not to over-harvest. So there are many, many trees in this area. We'll harvest a few from this tree and move on to the next tree. All right, hope you enjoyed that. And in the meantime, by the way, you can support us and prepare yourself with good nutrition, lab-tested products, and storable superfoods and foods, certified organic, laboratory-tested, at healthrangerstore.com. And we appreciate your support, of course, and that's what keeps us going. So check that out and watch for the upcoming Black Friday sales event, which is about a month away, something like that. Before then, by the way, on October 25th, we have our telethon fundraiser for Brighteon.tv, where I am auctioning off a lot of interesting items. We're going to have a big landing page for you on that to show you what we have. And that should be a very fun day. So mark your calendar. I think that's a Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday, October 25th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's a live all day telethon fundraiser for Brighteon.tv because we're eliminating all the ads. The on-air ads are going to be gone. Instead, we're asking our supporters to give a little bit so that we can fund operations and for the Brighteon TV channel that has all these amazing hosts and guests. It also covers brighteonradio.com. And we just want to raise enough to keep it running and provide a platform, a voice for people who are telling the truth and questioning the narratives of the lying establishment. That's all we're trying to do with this effort. So thank you for your support. And thank you for listening today. I'll have, of course, another detailed podcast for you tomorrow, probably with an interview. Well, for certain with an interview because I'm behind on publishing a couple of them. Got a lot of good information coming for you. And in the meantime, let us pray that there's peace in the world and peace in the Middle East. Let's pray that Israel does not add to the escalation that Hamas started in this case. Let's pray that the U.S. does not add to the escalation. And like Brad Cummings said, I interviewed him over the weekend. I posted that interview separately. You may want to check that out. Brad Cummings, he said that we must pray for God to intervene because with God, all is possible. If it feels hopeless, if it feels like doomsday, if it feels like we're powerless, nothing we can do, just remember that God can intervene and he can accomplish anything. And it's time for us to directly call for God's intervention. And so I'm going to pray after this, and I invite you to pray. I'm not going to pray right here on the podcast, but I invite you to pray on your own time, in your own way. Pray to God and ask God for intervention. Ask God to unleash a flood of peace across our world and to end the violence, end the deception, end the genocide that is being openly pursued now by so many tribes and parties and nations. We need God's intervention now more than ever in our lifetimes. So thank you for joining me in that, and thank you for listening today. I'll be with you again tomorrow. In the meantime, God bless you all. God bless America. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.